magnolias.
They never do evil plans.
And begonias.
All they ever want is to grow. Plants,
iris,
are smarter than us.
Violets,
they make a living in without any fuss.
Us,
water, sun, and air.
And
are all they need to grow. Do I have to get specific? I think plants
we are so terrific.
Plants are generous souls.
It is Garden Talk Live at KSRO, hour number two. Steve Gardner back and delighted to spend the hour with Dave Fazio, owner of Sonoma Mission Gardens for some 40-plus years, certainly one of the most beautiful nurseries anywhere in California, and I dare say the country, out there at Craig and Arnold Drive in beautiful Sonoma Valley. David also has been on staff for 40 years at the JC in Santa Rosa, the junior college, teaching in the horticulture department, and is designed and installed literally thousands of some of the most beautiful landscapes you will see at both large, drop-dead, gorgeous wineries as well as residences all throughout Northern California. 636-1350 if you'd like to reach Dave or Steve at ksro.com. And you're going to get a bonus today because not only will you have access to Dave Fazio's 40-plus years in the world of plants, but also Kate Fry. Kate is joining us this morning live in the greenhouse. Thank you for coming in this morning.
Thanks for having me.
It's always wonderful to see you. Get a little closer to the microphone, if you would, please. That's much better. Now let's hear that voice.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's wonderful to see you. You have a new book called Ground Rules, 100 Easy Lessons for Growing More Glorious Garden. And let me read from the book verbatim if you're not familiar with Kate Fry. She grew up in Berkeley, California, a noted garden designer, eloquent advocate for pollinators, and popular garden speaker and educator. She's designed and managed such famous gardens as the Organic Public Gardens at Fetzer Vineyards. Her gardens highlighting organic agriculture won 2 gold medals and 1 silver gilt medal at the Chelsea Flower Show in London, a rare honor for an American designer. She's worked in Japan, Malaysia, and Saudi Arabia. She currently writes 2 gardening columns. Actually, it's 1 gardening column in the Press Democrat. And her book, The Bee Friendly Garden, which is the last time we had Kate on the show, was selected as one of the best gardening books of the year in 2017 by the American Horticultural Society. Her newest educational venture, the American Garden School, made its debut in 2017. We had Kate on the show for that. So congratulations on this really cool concept of a book. And you had to edit yourself down to 100 tips that you felt could make every gardener out there a better gardener.
Well, that was the hardest part of all because, of course, we could, I'm sure most people who garden could go on for minutes about, if not hours, about every subject and trying to distill how to prune a shrub into 100 words or how to plant a plant or design a garden. It was really a challenge.
We know plant people. They could discourse for many, many minutes on every possible subject under the sun. So who is this aimed at?
Well, it's aimed at the general public. So and I think it's a book that you don't have to read from the beginning to the end. You could pick it up and dip into it. It's part of a series that the publisher, Timber Press, is doing, and I think another one of the topics in the series is how to be healthy and I think there's again 100 rules and in with 100 words each, and so this is an effort to really put out a lot of information and really in a very concise form, and that will help direct people to have a glorious, successful garden.
I think it's a great idea to pair this to buy a Daphne, a Princess Daphne from your nursery, Dave, and enclose a copy of your new book, Kate, Ground Rules. It's only been out a few months, hasn't it?
Yes, it came out in November.
Oh, it's just beautiful. Megan writes us a follow-up. Hi, Dave, Steve, and Kate. Thanks for answering my question. I appreciate the advice. I should have asked another question, though. Do the maples do better in the ground rather than a pot? That's the only reason I want to plant it in the ground. I just assumed I'd have a better chance of getting it to grow fuller in the ground than in the pot. That's my only follow-up question about my Japanese maple. Your responses?
Well, any plant is going to perform better in the ground than it does in a pot, unless it's something that really needs special drainage or something of that nature. Is, you know, it's kind of a unique type of thing. But Japanese maples would do better in the ground. They're going to get a bigger root system. They're going to have a larger soil reservoir to pull nutrients and water and stuff out of. They take a lot less work. I'm notorious about going out and buying or collecting plants, and you know, every so often I find myself with a couple hundred plants on my deck, and it's like I have no room. And plus, it takes a lot of time to water all these things. And if I get them in the ground, I can walk around my garden and enjoy them, and I don't have to worry about hand watering them.
636-1350. We have open lines now for both Dave Fazio and Kate Fry. You get two for one on this edition of Garden Talk. At 1105, Chef John Ash in the KS Arto kitchen as we welcome from San Francisco author Georgia Friedman. She was the managing editor for Savour magazine, one of the most beautiful food magazines ever in the history of American publishing. Georgia has a new book called Cooking South of the Clouds, Recipes and Stories from China's Yunnan Province, where she lived for a number of years. And of course, in anticipation of Chinese New Year's, which is February 5th, we thought it'd be great to have Georgia come up and tell us great stories and cooking ideas from the Yunnan province of China. We'll also be joined by a couple members of the Redwood Empire Chinese Association. They're having some great February-based events for celebrating Chinese New Year's. 636-1350. No one on hold at this moment. Do get in with your questions because we want to give you access to both Kate and Dave. Hi, everyone. If I don't have good draining soil, is there some way to change it so it does drain well? It's a general question. It's from Lenora in Windsor. And Kate, you have a whole section about soil in your book.
Yeah, there's the section number three that's called The Real Dirt is all about soil, and it's really based on how to develop and maintain healthy soil. And so it addresses exactly this question, also in the context of when people build a new house, the soil is almost always it gets really compacted around it. So some people have naturally soil that naturally doesn't drain well. Some people have soil that's become compacted through the construction process, or if somebody used the front yard as a parking lot, that sort of thing. So this it's a really common issue, and there's a couple of solutions. And here's the more labor intensive way is to get about 6 inches of compost and put it on the soil. And when the soil is moist but not wet, so probably have to wait some time because of all the rain. Then you could dig in this 6 inches of compost, and that'll kind of jumpstart the whole drainage naturally. So it's going to bring in earthworms and other soil organisms that are going to cause the soil to aggregate. You could also work in some gypsum. Helps the soil to aggregate and adds calcium. And so then you could top the soil with mulch, like a decomposed or composted green waste is my favorite mulch. It's also not flammable, really, like wood chips can be if we're worried about fire.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the harder way. The easy way that's kind of more long-term is like right now you could go out and put about an inch of compost on the soil and then put it depends if there is if you have a weed problem, you could put an inch of soil, then you could roll out, put cardboard over that, or inch of compost, then you put corrugated cardboard on top of that, and then about 4 inches of compost, and then you'll wait about 2 months, and then your soil will start through the action of earthworms to become much more soft and friable. So the trick is to let the what's naturally there do the work for you, which is earthworms and other soil organisms, but you need to give them food in the form of compost or composted green waste.
And one of these sections, number 34, that I highlighted in that mm-hmm. section, spread it, don't till it. Why?
Yeah, so this idea, so this is the idea that we have this idea that we must like, do things to our soil. So obviously, the soil has been here for millions upon millions of years, and we haven't. And so plants and trees and ecosystems have flourished without us. So that to me, that's really evidence that the soil doesn't need us to till it. And so it's always relied on the actions of earthworms and other and soil arthropods and soil organisms or animals in some cases to do the tilling for us. So the best thing you could do is to mulch because you could think of the soil as a city. And so every time you till it, you're basically destroying that city. And so some or the organisms like bacteria are building back up again very, very quickly, whereas some of the very important soil organisms like soil fungi, which have a lot of them have relationships with plant roots, take a very long time to grow again. And so when you're mulching, you're encouraging this whole array of soil organisms, not one type or another.
There's a beautiful, eloquent answer for you, Lenore, about improving your soil. And I love the visualization of destroying a city when you till. Don't do that. AJ, thanks for joining us. Welcome to Garden Talk Live at KSRO. Hi, AJ.
Good morning. So my question this morning is I have a multi-grafted fruit tree. It's a peach and an apricot. And the apricot portion hasn't been producing at all. And now it also has that gooey fungus that comes up, the gooey one. So my question is should I just pull out the whole thing and start over, or can I cut off the portion of the apricot because it's just not going to produce, and either regraft or just allow the peach side to, or you know, the peaches to kind of do what they're going to do? Hello?
Well, from you, the way I was thinking, the way you're talking, I think I would probably go to cutting the apricot branch off.
Okay.
You're going to have a tree that's going to be a little lopsided and ugly
right.
for a year or two, but it will recover from that. And apparently you're doing well with the peach.
The apricots, it's just where I live. It's just hopeless.
Well, yeah, I'm one of these people. I love apricots, and there's nothing like having apricots in your backyard. But this is Sonoma County, and we have late rain and late cold, and apricots bloom early,
exactly.
and
they
can be a little
not
tough.
Well.
And
right.
So I would, you know, rather than go out and start with a whole new tree, if the tree's been there for 2 or 3 years already, I would probably just get rid of the apricot branch and let the peach do its thing.
And see what will happen with that. That's what, okay.
Yeah, it'll take a while to fill in that space where it's been pruned back from before and stuff, but it'll recover and do quite well for you.
I'm gonna
try that.
And Kate has something to add to it.
Yeah, if I could add, I was just visiting a friend who's an extension crop advisor in her in the Central Valley, and her neighbor is a very well-known retired pomologist from UC Davis, and so he was telling her, giving her advice on how to prune her orchard, her little fruit orchard at home, and told her, whatever you do, do not prune your apricots in the winter. Do only summer pruning, because it's because of that gooey. I think it's a bacterial disease, and is it Eutypha? It's something a EU.
I think so.
And so when you're pruning, you're essentially opening up these. Mm-hmm. Wounds, basically, you could call them, to this bacteria invading them. So,
so maybe summer pruning also on peaches, because peaches get it too.
Yeah, I used to summer.
About that.
I know somebody who Michael Maltus, who was the original
Gardener at Fetzer.
Yeah, garden manager at Fetzer Vineyards in Hopland. Uh-huh. He went to just summer pruning instead of winter pruning on all of his fruits, and just found that instead of his fruit trees then growing these enormous vegetative shoots, that became much more manageable.
Uh-huh. Interesting.
Actually, I'm going to try that before I go out there and start. I haven't pruned my fruit trees yet, but I think maybe I'm going to hold off until summer, May or so. All right. Well, I appreciate your information and advice, everybody. So have a wonderful day.
Thanks so much for your call. Good to hear from you, AJ. Let's take a call from Laura, who's calling from Sebastopol this morning. Welcome to Garden Talk live at KSRO. Hi, Laura.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
Well, I want to thank you so much. I look so forward to your radio presentation every Saturday. We get plants, then we get food. The only thing I'd like to add is maybe beer. Anyway.
Yeah, hear, hear.
Thank you all.
Well, you could grow the hops and make your own.
Yeah, well, I'm thinking about that, actually. anyway, that's not my question. My question is, when the fruit starts to fall and the leaves start to fall in the wintertime, do you leave them there and let them be there and that's part of the compost, or do you pick them up because of the wasps and bees, or not bees, never bees, but the wasps sometimes that are part of the fruit? I'm just real curious about what to do with that.
Well, I always pick up all the fruit that falls, and I put it, and because like apples and pears may have a coddling moth, and so you're essentially allowing them to mature and create more coddling moths. So I pick them up and I put them in the green bin. I know if people have goats or a pig or something, they are more than happy to eat them, but I definitely remove them. And peaches also. I think there's some fungal diseases that peaches that are on the peach fruit themselves, and it's really important if you see that to remove those fruits from the tree. But definitely, if they fall, clean up all of the fallen fruit. So
How about the leaves? Leave them as is? Or?
I rake up the leaves, too, and I put them in the green bin because I don't have a really good active compost pile. But I think if you have a good active, hot compost pile, you could compost them. But with many, many plants, I just leave the leaves underneath. But ones that are prone to disease in any way, like roses or fruit trees, then I practice good hygiene.
Yeah, it's really important. Sanitation or cleanliness around your plants will lessen your disease and bug problems, is what it amounts to.
So there's your answer, Laura.
Okay, well, thank you so much. I really appreciate you all. Thank you.
Our pleasure. Nice talking with you. Before we take our quick break, I've highlighted some of the most interesting to me concepts in Kate's new 100 tips, the ground rules in planning your paradise, the first chapter. I was taken with number 5, gray is gorgeous. Mm-hmm. You don't usually hear about someone saying the gray palette. It's always the bright poppy magenta blues, but gray, an appreciation for that.
Yeah, well, this fixation with gray started years ago at the old garden at Fetzer Vineyards. Of course, inland Mendocino County, where it is really hot in the summer and bright and dry, excessively so, I feel, and sometimes. And so I absolutely love English perennial borders, but obviously the plants that grow in them are not appropriate for our the hotter areas of our warmer areas of our region and of our state, really. And so I thought, well, I'm gonna plant a California appropriate English perennial border or California perennial border. And so I chose. So then I thought, I'm gonna use a lot of the plants have gray foliage. I'm gonna make this border all gray plants. Mm-hmm. And so I had a 250 foot long, 50 foot wide gray perennial borders, yes.
I remember it.
Yeah, and they're one of the best and most magnificent and interesting gardens that were there. And all the plants were habitat plants besides. It was filled with life.
Don't be afraid of gray.
Yeah.
A couple other things in that, and I'm sure you and Dave both feel strongly about this, number 11 and 12. Think about your paths when you're designing a garden carefully, and pay attention to enclosures and openness.
Yeah, paths are really interesting, and I just it's so awkward many times when a path up to people's front door is wide enough for one person, or people's paths are wide enough for one person. So when you're walking up to a friend's or your own front door with somebody, then there's this sort of awkward moment, like, okay, who am I going to make walk in back of me, or who am I going to encourage to walk in front of me? And so so having wide paths is makes for a hospitable entrance or exit from your house. Just visually, it looks much more welcoming, and also in terms of the scale in our gardens, a scale in relation to the house and the rest of the garden, wider, not wide like a road, but wide, just in relation to the scale of the garden.
And then thinking about enclosures and open spaces, balance.
I find the emotional effects of gardens so interesting, and I hadn't really focused on them until I heard a lecture by a landscape architect talking about this, and he would put 52 emotions in a box, and then he would have his students just reach in and randomly pull one out, and then they had to design, everybody was assigned the center courtyard at the university to make into a garden that reflected that emotion. And they didn't have to specify what plants, but the scale, the shapes of the paths, the pattern, whether they're straight or curved, the texture and structure of the plants, whether they're spiky or weeping or dark, densely planted, open. Mm. And so a lot of the students were really good artists, and so they came up with these concepts that were fascinating. And so it opened up this whole world to me. And so I realized that one of the most comforting spaces in our garden is, say, sitting on a bench under not a really dark tree, but under a tree, and then looking out onto an open landscape, as I think it creates a really comfortable feeling in the garden.
Not only practical information, but beautiful reflections and with a bit of magic thrown in. It's Kate Fry's new book. It's called Ground Rules, 100 Easy Lessons for Growing a More Glorious Garden. One of you will win an autographed copy of this book at the end of the show. We'll be back with more questions and answers. Kate Fry and Dave Fazio pinch hitting for Gwen Kilcher in the KSRO Greenhouse today.
I'm Quinn Cook with the Golden State Warriors.
I'm Stephen Curry.
I'm Steve Kerr.
I'm Damian Jones.
This is Where the Warriors Play.
103.5. 94.5.
KSRO.
The best. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sonoma County.
That's Dr. Walter Tom's staff thanking you, Sonoma County, for voting Dr. Walter Tom, the Press Democrat, best cosmetic surgeon. Why? He listens. He cares. And he and his team are highly skilled in cosmetic procedures.
Thank you to our wonderful patients who voted us, the Press Democrat, best cosmetic surgeon for a third year in a row. We are humbled by your kindness and will continue to strive to achieve the best cosmetic results possible, because patient happiness and their self-confidence is our top priority.
The best. Botox, fillers, lasers, hair transplants, smart lipo, tummy tucks, and breast augmentation. A true professional with skills beyond the ordinary. Cosmetic surgeon Dr. Walter Tom. Contact his office today for a free consultation, or visit his website at drwaltertom.com. drwaltertom.com.
We love you, Sonoma County!
Does healthy eating habits fit into your New Year's resolution? Then shop the Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market for fresh local produce. It's important to know where your food comes from, and you can meet the local farmers and ranchers who raise quality, locally grown food products for you to enjoy. At the market, you can savor a variety of delicious prepared foods. The market offers fresh local ingredients for healthy dinners, a variety of quality meats from beef, chicken, and pork to seafood, along with seasonal fruits and vegetables. Taste the local goat cheeses from Two Rock Valley Goat Cheese. Sample the wonderful baked goods, jams, spices, and pastas. Everything you need to create memorable healthy dinners is at the Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market. Open year-round, rain or shine, Wednesdays and Saturdays, 8:30 till 1 p.m. at the Luther Burbank Center for the Arts. The Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market, where it's always fresh, local, and fun.
Some job boards make you sort through tons of the wrong resumes, which makes finding a great candidate like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. That's not smart. The smart way? ZipRecruiter. They actively find and invite qualified candidates to apply. So, while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack. ZipRecruiter. The smartest way to hire.
Try ZipRecruiter now for free at ZipRecruiter.com/free. That's ZipRecruiter.com/free.
Listen Saturday mornings 9 to noon for Garden Talk and the Good Food Hour, brought to you on KSRO by the Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market. Garden Talk is hosted by Steve Garner and Gwen Kilcher, who welcome your gardening questions from 9 to 11. The Good Food Hour from 11 to noon is hosted by Chef John Ash and Steve Garner, with delicious insights into cooking, eating, and enjoying good food. Garden Talk and the Good Food Hour, live and local, Saturdays 9 to noon on Sonoma County's News Talk, KSRO.
KSRO, AM, FM, and online. Depend on it.
We're working our way through Kate Fry's new book just out a couple months ago, Ground Rules, 100 Easy Lessons for Growing a More Glorious Garden. I'm Steve Garner along with Dave Fazio today in the KSRO Greenhouse. You can reach us live in the KSRO Greenhouse at 636-1350, or you can always shoot us an email, steve@ksro.com, for any gardening questions. You have about 100 years worth of gardening experience sitting here waiting to help you. Can't ask for anything better than that. And we'll work our way through Kate's book during the next half hour. But when you call or email us, we'll prioritize that and get your questions asked and answered as quickly as possible. The book is divided into different sections. It's 100 of Kate's top picks. And a few of the ones in the Joy of Plants: don't buy root-bound plants and start small. Advantages to both of those.
Well, if it's a pity that everybody doesn't have the book in front of them, because the photograph on the Don't Buy Root-Bound Plants says it all.
That's number 15.
Yes, I know that we've all, including myself, bought plants that are completely root-bound, and it's just a sad reality that that if plants don't sell quickly enough in nurseries, that and some plants just grow really fast and they shouldn't be in containers long, that you get some root-bound plants, and when so some plants recover, so you want to pull those roots apart, and sometimes they're wound so tightly, this is like a major effort, and you have to cut them with a shovel or cut off some with pruners. It can take some effort, and especially if it's a plant you really want, and there isn't any more of them. So, but it can be worth it. But and so some plants recover really easily from it. I would say like perennials and any kind of plants that that tend to spread, like some of the ornamental oreganos. It's not a big deal in the long run. I would say the most essential plants to really pay attention to this is our trees. Uh-huh. And I have heard gone to several gardens or arboretums, and they showed me this like a beautiful line of autumn sunset maples that they planted as an LA, like a real focus of the arboretum. And then 20 years later, they are starting to die. Well, they thought, why? What is going on? And they started, they shook the tree. They grabbed the trunk, and they tried to wobble it back and forth, which, yes, it did. And then they dug some up and found that the plants had been root-bound. The roots had never been pulled apart. And it really basically took about 15, 20 years for them to begin to decline and then die, which is really a tragedy when it comes to a tree. That's a huge investment, and that's not the only place I've seen this happen. So it's important to scrutinize your roots.
There's always, for some reason, there's always been this thing about bigger is better. Mm-hmm. And people will, you know, if you've got two trees that are identical in 5 gallon cans, not identical, but they're the same type of tree in 5 gallon cans, and one of them 3 foot tall and the other one's 8 foot tall, the people will always want to take the 8 footer because it's a bigger tree and they're getting more for their money or whatever. I don't know what the concept is, but, and when in reality it's a shorter one that's going to do the best job in growing for
them. But people want sooner gratification. That's it.
Yeah. Well, I, all of us have to be so patient when it comes to our plants and our gardens, and we want them to happen right away. We plant them. We want them, want it, them to be mature, and so I can completely understand. It's just that you're really going backwards when you pick a large
size. So plant
size.
Small. They'll catch up quickly, won't they?
Yeah, there's actually been a lot of studies that have been done where they've planted a 5 gallon versus a 15 gallon can of the same thing, and the 5 gallon in a year or two, you don't even realize that it was smaller than the 15 was.
Amen to that.
Caught up to it.
Helen would like a question answered about her hydrangea. Welcome to Garden Talk Live at KSRO. Hi, Helen.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
Last year, my hydrangeas did not do well at all. The year before, they were stellular. So I'm wondering, do they produce like every other year like that, and what can I do to make them fabulous again?
Hydrangeas usually perform pretty well year after year. It's kind of unusual unless there's something in the weather or environmental conditions that would set them back. It could be pruning. It could be lack of water. Could be maybe that they
It wasn't either of those things.
How about a shot of fertilizer?
Yeah, that's what I wanted to know, what I should use. And when should I start doing that? They're all trimmed back now.
I would go ahead and give them a shot of acid-based fertilizer now.
Okay.
And then use it according to the directions on the bag or the container or whatever you're using.
Okay.
But they hydrangeas like a lot of water, and which means that they would prefer more fertilizer than less, too, in the sense of using it according to directions. If, you know, more fertilizer doesn't mean using 2 cups instead of one.
Does it mean just doing it more often?
It just follow the directions on whatever you're using. Or if you're using a composted material or something of that nature, you can be a little more generous with it. But if you're using a bagged fertilizer or a one that comes in a can or something, make sure you read the directions and use it that way.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you very much.
Anything to add, Kate?
And I could add just a little bit. I just want to talk about the irrigation, and I think that that I've seen many gardens where most of it looks good, but then one corner doesn't look so good, and so I often tell people, okay, well, the first thing you want to check if you have plants that are not looking good is the irrigation, and so to turn it on and then go out and then make sure that the drippers are actually working, or they haven't popped off, or they're not clogged up. Around a particular plant, or the drip line hasn't been cut. This happens. It's so easy for this to happen. Also, not having the irrigation.
I'm the dripper.
yeah, turned
I'm
on.
I'm the dripper. So
turned on long enough.
I don't have it on an irrigation system, but it's right outside my front door, and it's enjoyable for me to water them. So I know that that's not the issue. Okay. Maybe it's just an off year.
Yeah. Well, also hand watering can be problematic. So after you water, you'll want to get like an old screwdriver or something and kind of dig in the soil and see actually how far the water has penetrated. I like to hand water, but I've just given up on it except when I'm watering in newly planted plants, because it seems like I'm just out there forever and the soil's only wet for 2 inches. And so, yeah, so this could be it also. And so that's something to check. Of course, you've got probably hopefully months before you need to check that.
Helen, thanks so much for your call.
You're welcome.
We appreciate it. Good hearing from you. Jerry would like a word with both of you. She wants some recommendations for planting kind of near a stream that's feeding into a pond. Let's learn out more. Hi, Jerry.
Hi. Thank you for calling on me. My son and I are helping some friends and neighbors with a pond that they have, and there was a vineyard was put across the street. It's part of now the runoff, and the water turned from where they could actually drink it to to really muddy and dirty and lots of problems with it. We have put in sedge, different sedges and other plants to help filter the water. And now we're kind of looking for decorative plants to add to it. They don't want red. They want purple. And there is clay ground there, and it's wet.
Okay, we've got the setup. We're going to take a break, and we're going to have both Kate and Dave think on it, and we'll be right back.
Join the switch to crystal clear KSRO-FM, 103.5 Santa Rosa, Windsor, 94.5 Petaluma. Hear the difference.
Do you know that the fastest growing careers require STEM skills? And yet women make up only 25% of the STEM workforce. Too many girls and young women find themselves discouraged from pursuing science, technology, engineering, and math. Community-wise, Women Investing in STEM Equity is an initiative working to support the aspirations of young women interested in STEM training and careers.
I want to engineer robots.
Hi, I'm Jessica Sherry, the CEO at Golden State Lumber in the North Bay. I'd like to see more girls graduate with STEM degrees. At Golden State Lumber, science, technology, engineering, and math are the backbone of our business. We are proud to support this collaboration to provide career opportunities and build a strong workforce in our industry.
I want to be an architect.
Girls in STEM, brought to you by Golden State Lumber in partnership with CTE Foundation's Community Wise. Visit ctesonomacounty.org and click the STEM Resources page for programs and resources.
If you're like most people in Sonoma County, you love the outdoors. Do you ever imagine bringing the outdoors indoors? Philip, a designer at Sonoma County Sunrooms, SoCo Sun, shares the benefits of adding a wellness room to your home.
At SoCo Sun, we provide a unique indoor-outdoor home addition through our amazing four-season sunrooms. We call them wellness rooms. Thinking of adding space to your home? Improved technology in our glass will elevate your life to allow year-round living. We've wowed thousands of happy customers by building these stellar additions. They use the room for yoga, exercise, soaking in the tub, crafting, or hosting. However you decide to use your wellness room, allowing a more natural light improves your performance, reduces pain, and it's nature's antidepressant. Room additions will also add value to your property's net worth.
Sonoma County Sunrooms is offering up to 25% off and $1,500 factory rebates for a limited time. Visit the showroom on Santa Rosa Avenue, just north of Todd Road. SoCo Sun Design. Installations, remodel.
Win a Lexus, cash, and more this month at Great Resort and Casino. Play to enter the Drive Away in Luxury drawing on February 22nd, where you could win a Lexus. Plus, more ways to win than anywhere else. Multiplier Wednesdays, get up to 7 times the points. Thursdays, turn points into slot play. And win up to $30,000 in prizes in the Good Fortune slot tournaments. Best of all, sign up for Greaton Rewards and get up to $500 in free play. Learn more at GreatonResortCasino.com. Complete rules available at the Reward Center.
With Sonoma County's most accurate, most dependable forecast, here's Daniel Trucios on the KSRO Weather Watch.
Showers and rain for today. Chance of morning thunder, high 56, 55 on the coast. Occasional rain tonight, low 46, 48 on the shores. Rain and showers continue tomorrow at 53 degrees, the high across the county. Occasional showers for Monday at 47. Depend on weather every 30 minutes on FM News Talk 103.5 and 94.5 KSRO.
It is Garden Talk. It is live. We're in the greenhouse with Kate Fry and Dave Fazio. Kate's new book is Ground Rules, 100 Easy Lessons for Growing a More Glorious Garden. She has distilled into 100 one-page primers, things that you may not think about and overlook and think may not be very important and yet are really the keys to be successful in the long term. Dave Fazio, of course, owner of the Sonoma Mission Gardens for some 40 years, has been dispensing gardening advice on this show for 17 plus years, and as a teacher at the horticulture department and at Santa Rosa Junior College for also close to 40 years. We're talking with Jerry about some suggestions for plants for a stream that's feeding into a pond, and both Kate and Dave had some follow-up questions for you. Go ahead.
Yeah. Now, so is this stream, is it in your garden itself, and so is it managed and kind of weed-free, or is it kind of out, you know, sort of more wild and weedy?
We are, it hasn't been. What they had done is fill it with rocks, And we have gone in and removed some of the rocks, not all of them, and put in other plants that are helpful in erosion and in filtering water, mainly different kinds of sedge and things like that. So I guess that would make it weedy.
Well, are you looking for like lower flowering sort of things, or are you looking for shrubberies?
More lower flowering things.
Okay. You know, some of the things and you might consider, and they don't all, you know, you're going to have to kind of pick and choose because you're not going to get them all in purple. But you might consider things like cannas, society garlic, comfrey.
I hadn't thought of that.
There's a batch of irises that will tolerate wet spots. Mm-hmm. There's a sage that's kind of a blue called Salvia uliginosa, the bog sage that is native to a wetter spot.
Yeah, if it's shady, then or native chain fern, the Woodwardia fimbriata is really beautiful and striking and can tolerate kind of wet conditions and some drought. Just some really beautiful shrubs, and they're especially beautiful now, are some of the creek dogwoods and the ornamental dogwoods. And my next column in the Press Democrat is going to focus on those. So, and that's okay. the home section on every other Saturday. So I'm not sure exactly what Saturday it's going to appear in, but they're deciduous, and a number of the selections and cultivars have just amazing winter color, whether it's crimson or it's a brilliant sulfur yellow or salmon color. They're just absolutely stunning. There's a couple of cultivars that have beautiful variegated leaves. So for the summertime, the stems in the winter are sort of a reddish, but more of a dull reddish. And one of the one with beautiful gold variegation is called Hedgerow's Gold. And then the one that's very sort of upright is called Elegantissima. And these are both absolutely gorgeous, and they could take some drought as well as quite a lot of water. They're often used in rain gardens in many different places. So these are a really good choice for wet and dry areas that are inundated in the winter or have bad drainage, and then are not completely dry, but somewhat dry in the summer.
So there's a lot of suggestions for you, Jerry.
Great. Thank you very much.
Also, Jerry, if you have one of the older sunsets, in the front of the book, there's a section in there that's called Plants for Wet or Boggy Conditions or something like that. Mm-hmm. But there are, and it'll give you some suggestions to get started in, and then I would go in and talk to your local nursery people and see what they're suggesting for that particular situation, too.
Good suggestions. Buy local, shop local. That's one of your top 100, Kate. Thanks for your call, Jerry. Back to Kate's book. We've kind of gone through, touched on some of the, at least some of my interesting notes from planning your paradise, the joy of plants, the real dirt. Be wise with water. Get into the grid was one that I thought was an interesting. What does getting into the grid mean?
Yeah, so this is in the water section, and it's just a method of setting up your drip irrigation system. Because I think most of us, I call it do the squiggle, and so their drip irrigation line just kind of squiggles all over their yard, and then especially when it's covered up with mulch, you have like no idea where it is, where it isn't, and inevitably when you want to plant a plant, it's nowhere near the drip line. So you get a piece of spaghetti tubing and you connect it, and anyway, your system becomes completely inefficient, and there's usually filled with a multitude of unused drippers and broken off spaghetti line and so on. So doing the grid is thinking in terms of efficiency. So it's sort of using an agricultural model. Like if you picture a vineyard that has perfect lines or measured rows of grapes with a drip irrigation line going down each row. So it's using taking that same sort of template and using it in your garden. So you'll be making a measured parallel grid, whether the lines are a foot and a half apart, 2 feet apart, 4 feet apart. Depending, and then you just plant. Make sure to plant next to that. You could pop in a dripper, and make sure to plant next to the dripper. Or you could buy emitter tubing that has the emitters, pressure compensating emitters at measured distances in the lines. So like whether they're 2 feet apart or 1 feet apart. And if you want a fully wetted bed, this is the way to go. And so if your grid is measured, say you know that there's 2 foot in between lines, if you find one line, you'll know where all the rest of them are. You just pull a tape. And so if you plant dyes and you want to plug the hole, you'll easily be able to find it instead of like digging all over the place like a squirrel.
There's a lot to cover, and we're just scratching the surface. In the section, how to be a good garden parent, I loved, don't plant too high, pick the right tree, grow trees from seed, which I never would have thought to do. Also, when removing a branch, cut to the collar, please. Say no to plant torture, which you refer to as pollarding, and never, ever plant invasives. And, of course, we already touched on cardboarding to the rescue, how important that is. Just touch on one thing. I always think of planting too low as the problem, that things drown and you need to kind of mound your plants. But you're saying don't plant too high.
Well, I see plants planted too high everywhere. And I think this was probably a reaction to people planting too low. So planting too low is an issue also. With some plants, it's not an issue, like flowering dogwoods, because they are from creek and riparian areas, and so they root easily along the stem. But like for Japanese maples, it'll certainly kill them and kill them quickly. And so I think there was a reaction to that, and so people were encouraged to plant on mounds or plant high, and so the roots are exposed. And so we all know roots need to be underground. They don't like to be exposed to the sun. So not only do roots get dried out when they're exposed to the sun, but the soil in potting that is used in nurseries, that in pots, it's designed to drain very quickly. And it drains much more quickly than the native soil that exists in the ground. And so if the roots are exposed and the root ball with this well-draining soil, it dries out much more quickly than the surrounding landscape. But your irrigation is based on the soil in the native soil. You're not kind of poking your finger in your plant's root ball. And so I see so many plants die or fail to thrive because of this.
We'll take a break at that point. We're going to try to get to all the other questioners online and also on the phone with Kate Fry and Dave Fazio joining me, Steve Garner, in the KSRO Greenhouse, celebrating 32 years of Garden Talk this year.
Petaluma hears FM News Talk KSRO on Crystal Clear FM at 94.5.
Home. It's your retreat, especially at this time of the year when all you want to do is get out of the cold and into your comfy place. I'm Pat Kerrigan. That's why I invited Henry Mechanical into my home to see what they could do about some heating issues I had. You don't really know a company until you've seen them in action. 2 hours later, a years-old problem with my heating system was solved. Comfort returned. Ask Henry Mechanical about their Mitsubishi-zoned comfort solutions. It could save you from a temperature drop when you head to the back of the house. Mitsubishi-zoned comfort solutions, one of the ways that Henry Mechanical employs to make sure your home system is perfect for you. Installing a new heating system or fixing the one you have can be a dirty business. Not with these guys. They're prompt, polite, clean, and professional. Who can you trust your comfort to? Henry Mechanical, a local business that's in the business of your comfort. Call 707-838-3311 or visit henrymechanical.com.
Michael O'Shea here, manager of KSRO. When Malm Fireplace Center joined us as a Warrior sponsor, I went in to meet Ken and Shelley, owners. I walked into a warm and inviting showroom with all the latest technology and efficient and beautiful ways to warm your home. And yep, I walked out with a new fireplace insert, which is operated with a touch of a handy remote and has become an immediate, beautiful addition to my home. Malm Fireplace Center, for 60 years serving up warm and beautiful. 368 Yolanda, Santa Rosa, and Malm, M-A-L-M, fireplacecenter.com.
This is John Greenhut, and if your teeth are stained from coffee, tea, or smoking, Power Swabs is the answer. In 5 minutes, you'll see two shades whiter teeth, and in 7 days, six shades. Even better, there's no messy strips or trays that you'll have to leave in your mouth for an hour. Just swab your teeth for 5 minutes, and you're done. To try Power Swabs, call 1-800-679-0969. Your bright white smile will have your friends talking about how great you look. Try it risk-free. 1-800-679-0969. That's 1-800-679-0969.
Live in the KSRO Greenhouse, Steve, Kate, and Dave. Coming up at 11:05 with Chef John Ash, Georgia Friedman visiting with us live in the KSRO kitchen. Her new book is Cooking South of the Clouds, Recipes and Stories from China's Yunnan Province, in honor of course, Chinese New Year, coming up on Tuesday, February 5th. It'll be a stimulating hour of delicious conversation, I promise you that. Linda would like a word with you all about her hummingbird bush, it looks like. Welcome to Garden Talk. Hi, Linda.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Is the correct name for that buddleia? Am I pronouncing that right?
Oh, butterfly. Okay.
Oh, butterfly bush. Yeah, I get the butterfly and the hummingbird mixed up.
Kate and I were looking at one another and kind of guessing as to what a hummingbird bush might be.
Oh, okay. Butterfly bush. Sorry. Anyway, I'm not sure when to. It's very, a lot of them, I have many of them, and they're very leggy. And I didn't know if I should wait closer to spring to cut them back, and how far I could cut them back, or is it? Do they mind being cut back any time? Or
yeah,
how can I get them more bushy and less leggy?
And we've got about 30 seconds for that answer.
Okay. Well, butterfly bushes tend to get leggy, and there's some new dwarf varieties that are much easier to manage. But I prune them pretty radically. I would prune them to. If they're really leggy and ugly, I would get a saw and cut them to about a foot high. And then every year, sort of after that, you could cut them a little higher, like to 2 feet. But this is what they really need to make them more manageable and more attractive.
Anything else to add, Dave?
Butterfly bushes bloom terminally. They mm-hmm. bloom at the end of new growth, and the harder you prune them, the more new growth you get, mm-hmm. the more flowers you'll get.
You are, Linda. Yeah. Thanks to call. Thanks for the call from Forestville. We're out of time. We're not going to be able to get to a couple more calls and emails, but everyone that called or emailed is entered into the drawing. Kate, your favorite number today between 1 and 10, and we've assigned these numbers randomly.
Mm-hmm. 4.
Caller number 4 would be AJ, although she wasn't the fourth caller. She received the number 4. So, AJ, you've won an autographed copy of Kate Fry's new book, Ground Rules, and we'll tell you how you can pick up that book.
Traffic on the 5s. Weather 6 times an hour. Sonoma County's morning news with Pat Kerrigan on FM News Talk, KSRO.
There's a better way to garden and landscape in Sonoma County, and it starts at a Better Way Produce and Nursery on Stony Point Road, just north of Todd in Santa Rosa.
Hi, Daniel R. Gibbs, Botanical Artist. I'm the award-winning resident licensed landscape designer and contractor. Our team has won first place 14 years in a row at the Sonoma County Fair's Hall of Flowers. And our garden, Coastal Charisma, won Best of Show 2018. Now, through February 15th, we're having our winter sale with discounts between 10 and 40% on everything, including our wide selection of deer-resistant, good-under oaks, and drought-tolerant plants. Right now is a great time to plant. During the rainy season, your plants have a chance to get established. This ensures that your plants acclimate quickly and require less water during their lifetime.
A Better Way Produce and Nursery, 3615 Stony Point Road, just north of Todd. A Better Way Produce and Nursery, open 7 days a week, 9 to 4:30.
At E.R. Sawyer Jewelers, they know your beloved jewelry is much more than a sum of its parts. Your grandmother's bracelet, your grandfather's pocket watch, your mother's wedding ring, the anniversary gift your husband so lovingly picked out. It's your heart, it's your story. E.R. Sawyer Jewelers has been here for 140 years, and their experts are waiting to help you restore, recreate, or start anew with your jewelry story. Come visit the E.R. Sawyer team and explore the possibilities. Rembrandt charms and bracelets are the perfect Valentine's Day gift. Charms capture moments in time unlike any other jewelry. From special symbols representing your love to the classic heart. Come see this collection that starts as low as $20. E.R. Sawyer Jewelers, the I Love You store since 1879. Downtown Santa Rosa and Main Street, St. Helena, E.R. Sawyer Jewelers. They want to be your jeweler. ersawyer.com, ersawyer.com.
Well, it certainly has been a fast 2 hours. Thank you, Dave Fazio. Wonderful to see you again.
My pleasure.
And Kate Fry. Thanks for coming in today.
Yeah, thanks, Steve. It's always a pleasure. It's great to see you, Dave. And
we'll see you again soon.
Yeah.
Ground Rules, the new book. Pick it up and also read Kate's column in our local Press or Democrat newspaper. Coming up next in the kitchen, Chef John Ash. This is KSRO Santa Rosa.